Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Jacob Pusey.
No one was there. No one was watching. There was no newspaper reporter. There was no one cared but me. And I think that's what I fell in love with. It was like, I fell in love with the solitude. I fell in love with the daily grind, mostly in my mind, more than anything else. And just thinking about how much that shaped me is still like, it still like floods my mind with positive memories and energy.
On this episode of The Rundown, we discover running from an adventurous and spiritual point of view with one of the co-founders of Aire Libre Running, Maurizio Diaz. He grew up watching his dad run marathons, and sure enough, he ended up becoming a runner himself. Although Maurizio excelled in running at a high level, he always enjoyed it as a way to discover new trails and explore new places. That need for adventure is what eventually led to the creation of his running retreat, where he gets to enjoy his passion with people from all walks of life, in places all over the world. After this episode, your next vacation might just be a runcation. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, I'd like to speak about a former guest of the show, Tommy Rivers Pusey, from episode 17. He shared his journey with all of us through Instagram, and he's inspired people from all over the world, including myself. When I interviewed him in Boston last year, it wasn't actually supposed to happen. Being an elite athlete, Tommy had a lot of commitments, including booth appearances, interviews, and shakeout runs. And a shakeout run is exactly where I officially met him. I introduced myself and told him that I totally understand why we couldn't sit down for a long chat for the podcast. He proceeded to tell me that the event after this shakeout got canceled and that he'd be happy to chat. Now, he could have just as easily used that time to rest. After all, he did have a pretty big race coming up. But instead, he invited me to his hotel so we can make the podcast happen. I can't say I would have had the same experience with another high-profile runner like himself, but that's who Tommy is, and I'm grateful for that chat to this day. If you haven't heard that episode yet, you should know that Tommy has grit. Right now, he's fighting for his life in the ICU. He's actually been there for weeks as doctors try to find out what's happening with him. As far as we know, it's a respiratory issue, and he's in stable condition and recovering from surgery. Unfortunately, he's fighting for his life under American healthcare, so financial pressure is building. His family has set up a GoFundMe where we can help ease their burden and help him rest once he returns home to his wife Steph and three little girls. Please send your prayers to Tommy in hopes he makes a full recovery, and if you can, send a dollar or whatever you can using the link in the show notes. Make sure to check the show notes for links to news and information about ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. This pandemic has allowed us to connect with runners from other parts of the world, which I'm very blessed for. My next guest is the co-founder of Aire Libre Running. He's an adventurer, runner, creative, and a nomad by nature. So I'd like to welcome from Mexico City, Maurizio Diaz.
Hey, an honor, a pleasure to be on your show, on this podcast. Thank you, man.
Yeah, no problem. I think you reached out maybe over 6 months ago, it seems. I'm embarrassed to say I hadn't heard of you guys until that point, but I'm happy you did, and happy we could finally have you on the show to talk about everything running.
Yeah, I know, man. I was really excited when you said, like, hey, there's an opportunity, and I was like, hell yeah.
What's the situation like in Mexico City right now with everything going on?
It's kind of crazy. You don't really know, because I mean, here usually, in like historically, our government has been very good at lying, and so like no, you know, figures, stats, and stuff. You can't really rely on what you know your government says, and so you know, there's as of maybe last week, we were still reaching our highest point of like you know, of people getting the virus and the curve just hitting its highest point. And now they're saying that we're starting to, you know, it's starting to slow down. But I don't know, man. It's also been so much time that, you know, I mean, life is starting to feel like it's going back to quote unquote normality. But at the same time, you hear that the situation is bad, but you don't really see it. You only hear of it. So it's complicated.
Yeah, as it is in most places in the world right now. Have you been able to continue training and running?
Yeah, fortunately I have. I mean, and well, and the craziest thing is that this thing gave me a way to change and complement my training with stuff that I didn't do. So I wasn't really keen to do much strength training. And now since like 3 months ago, I've like really, really been disciplined. And, you know, I've been connecting with friends through Zoom, and we've been doing daily strength exercises that have like really helped me out in within my running. No? And then every now and then I do like 30 minutes away from Mexico City driving, you can get to some really sick trails in high altitude. So early mornings I've been going off to the, you know, a bit more unknown trails and like away from everything. And I've been doing some really interesting exploring around all of these mountains.
Nice. So yeah, so it gives you an opportunity to try something different and implement some stuff you haven't done before. I'm kind of doing the same thing, so that's pretty cool. So I know you're in Mexico City now. You grew up there. What was it like being a kid in Mexico City, and were you athletic growing up?
Yeah, so, well, I mean, Mexico City is, for those that don't know it, you should really, really come and experience this metropolis, because it's one of the biggest cities in the world. No? It's like, I stopped counting at 20 million, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, no? So, so it's diverse, like crazy diverse, rich in pretty much anything you want or like, you would find a critical mass in this city, no? Funny enough, when I was younger, when I was born here and I grew up here, I was raised in a part, in like the south part of the city, which is a bit more of a suburbs where you mostly do have to rely on a vehicle to get around. And my school was a little bit further down the south. And so I grew up in that more suburban type of part of the city, which was like, yeah, I mean, it was a good life. And also in terms of athletics, well, yeah, of sports, no, many, there's more space. So you can find a lot of like open, you know, soccer fields or tracks, and like even like a hockey arena. I had an ice hockey arena near my place. Imagine that. So I was very fortunate to do a lot of sports when I grew up. No, anything from ice hockey, which you couldn't imagine, like especially you guys from Canada. And to, you know, in the soccer, tennis, pretty much anything, no?
That's awesome. Did your parents encourage that, or was that something that you took on yourself and kind of discovered on your own?
No, I was really encouraged by my parents. I mean, and I will get to this, I guess, but my dad is like, it's been a like 45 years of running. And I mean, my earliest my earliest memories of running is because I saw him running, and we went to cheer him at, you know, marathons, half marathons, and both, and my mother as well. No, my mother was always, you know, she was the one who, you know, signed us up for all the clubs. No, like the, you're going to swim now, and well, you're going to do this now, and so yeah, it was their encouragement, and of course. I mean, I definitely did enjoy it, no?
Right. So your dad was running pretty much your whole life, or ever since
you
could remember?
Ever since I was born, he was already a runner, and he still is. So all of my life, he has been a runner, and he, you know, he's definitely one of my, you know, biggest influences in terms of me running, no?
Hmm. So what is it because of him that you started to run, or when did running become something that you were interested in? Because not everything our parents do interests us, and sometimes it kind of deters us from actually doing those things. But in that wasn't your in your case, that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it wasn't that straight. No, I mean, there was a point. I guess this is pretty natural. Like I when I was a kid, I did, as you heard, I did a lot of sports. But then when I grew up and I was like a bit more of a teen, late teener, I pretty much stopped doing sports, and I focused more on partying. I did party, maybe a bit too young. And then when I went into college, that's when I first started to run again, because I wanted, I mean, the first, my approach to it was, I want to be a fit. No, I want to, it was more of like a very, very, how do you say, superficial objective to my, to how, why I started running. No, it was just, I want to be fit. I know I'm in college, I got to be in shape. And, but that very quickly, got me hooked, and I studied outside of Mexico City in another city north of the country, which was new to me. So running, and that was my also very first time where I saw running as a way also to explore a place that I didn't know. So I would just go out running and know the city that was new to me, and that got pretty. That was really fun, and I got hooked, and I just kept on doing it. No, and then eventually, as pretty much any runner's career, I signed up for, you know, the first 10K, and then another one, and then I tried to run them faster, and then that led to the half marathon and the marathon, and so on and so forth. No. But yeah, I mean, running hooks you, and it hooked me very early in when I started. And then again, as a way, I had the fortune to do this sort of very international type of bachelor, where many of my semesters I did them abroad in various places of the world. And so since I had already found that through running, I could explore the place that I was living, and I lived in many places. As soon as I landed in somewhere like a new place, a new city, a new town, I would, the first thing next morning, I would just go out and run, take a map. Like usually I would just take a physical map with me and then, you know, go run, and with no definite route, but just like where my curiosity would lead me. You know, here, what's there, what's behind this block. I see that park. And I would come back and, you know, and then I would have already this mental map and this sort of knowledge of all of these new places. And that I mean, that's one of the things that I most love about it, no? Still today, no?
Did your father do it competitively, or was it just for fun?
No, more for fun and to, you know, keep him grounded, you know, keep him strong and energized for, you know, the day-to-day hassle. And so he, I mean, he, must have already run like a big amount of marathons already, but never very competitively.
So was there any running lessons that your dad taught you from a young age? Because so many times our parents are trying to like teach us things as we grow older. And I'm sure as you got more into running, maybe that made him happy. I'm not sure. But to see that you were enjoying the passion that he had for the same sport, was there any like running lessons that he passed along to you?
Yeah, I mean, I can't recall like of a specific lesson, but definitely, I mean, no, as soon as I ran my first marathon, thinking of it now, I do remember when I was going to run my first marathon, like since he already had maybe 18 or 20 marathons in his pocket. I mean, of course, there was like very specific, you know, very small details that he would say, and like it's like very silly stuff as like, you know, when you're gonna put your bib, you know, try to, you know, put the pins this way so that, you know, you don't chafe, no, or you know, all of those little tiny things that after, you know, all those marathons and that experience, he passed along definitely, you know, all of, and yeah, and of course, I mean, he've always been really happy and supported my running. And as I was, and I said, I ran Montreal Marathon with him. I've done two marathons with him, you know, here in Mexico City and Montreal, and so yeah, it's a joy. It's a joy and a pleasure to do it with him. No.
Yeah, that's incredible. And the fact that you ran a Montreal Marathon, it blows my mind. It's like such a small world. Which year did you run it, and what did you think of the course?
Let me see. My biggest enemy is my memory. So you'll have to excuse me with that. No,
year doesn't matter.
This must have been maybe like 8 years ago or 9 years ago. And I found that the course, I mean, again, no, Montreal is a new city, was a new city to me. Everything that's new is very, you know, stimulating visually and mentally. So everything you went by, I remember when we started down, you know, by what was, I don't know, the river or lake. And there was this where the Formula One takes place, I think near that place. I don't know. Was that the beginning or the finish?
Yeah. I think it's the beginning. It's a Circuit Jacques Villeneuve.
Exactly. And then, no, and yeah, I remember going from there up, and then there's a lot of, I mean, I'm also really big on architecture, and there's like pretty cool architectural buildings in your city. And well, my sister was there as well. So we were, you know, she was cheering from, you know, point to point, and I think when we ran, we must have run it half of the marathon together. And then at some point, he let me go. No, he said, well, I think you have a bit more of a bit more energy than me right now. So go ahead. No.
Yeah. But that's a great way to see a new city. Right. And we'll talk about it a bit later about your running adventures and stuff. But, it's pretty cool that you got to see our city, what city I live in right now, that way too. So that's pretty neat. So you built your way up to the marathon, like as a lot of runners do. They start slow and then build your way up. So did you do a lot of your training by yourself? Did you find a group at the time, or how did the progression go for you? And like, what, like you started taking it? Did you start taking it more seriously, or was it really just for fun for you as well?
So for my first marathon, I did run and train mostly solo. At that period of time, I was living in Germany, and I signed up for the Barcelona Marathon, which took place in March. No, so it was a very interesting time of the year to train in that part of the world, because I went through basically all winter, and I was down in the south of Germany, like in the Black Forest. Yeah, so I pretty much had to run in like steep snow. and it was mostly solo there, or pretty much everything, no? And But then gradually I started to run with people. And then once I moved back to Mexico City some 6-7 years ago, this is where I actually, like, where my life, like, running socially mostly began. So I did meet a group of really, you know, energetic, crazy runners who, you know, who I would meet every 3 days and we'll run. And then at that point, without much guidance and much discipline. But then eventually one of them said, like, hey, there's this legendary coach that, you know, wants to, maybe train us, takes us. And then we eventually moved to we started training with a coach, and then there my running definitely progressed very, very quickly. That's when I qualified for Boston for the first time. That's when, you know, that's when I began, you know, running as you would consider maybe like semi-professionally, you know, like I was in a social environment. And then eventually that became like a, what nowadays is, you know, very common, the crew, no? That became like a very cool Mexican city crew. But then eventually I sort of drifted away, and since then I've been running mostly solo again. I don't specifically run with a group. I run mostly solo, but I do join, you know, from then every second day or every weekend I'll join various groups.
Mm-hmm. Well, who was the coach? What was the name of the group? And my third question is, what was the main difference between what you were doing before versus what you were doing as a group, and what led to that progression?
Yeah, so, well, the coach, he was Juanito, Juan. Rest in peace. He passed away like 4 years ago during had a heart attack, and we were at this trail race somewhere in Mexico, like, and he suffered from a heart attack and passed away. But he was quite a legend. He had a big group. He was this amazingly like fatherly figure. Most of people would describe him like a, you know, this Zen Buddhist type of guy who would just, you know, the first day I joined his group, he found out somehow that my birthday was just like the next day. And I didn't know, I mean, the guy didn't just learn my name that day. And the next day he would, you know, he bought like this huge cake and celebrated and just welcomed everyone. Like, he was a master, so, and the crew was called, it was still called Juanson after, you know, there's the Hanson marathon method. So one friend of the crew, you know, played and toyed around with the name, and he started calling it the Juanson marathon method. And so the crew eventually was nicknamed or named Juanson, no? After that play on words. And what changed, I mean, a lot of change. Like before that, as I said, we didn't really run with much guidance. So we would just gather, gather in the morning, and we would run like all the time as the fastest as we could up from like a 10K route. And we would do that over and over and over. And then maybe when we began to become more creative, we added up hills, but we did that like over a year. And of course that didn't lead at some point, it didn't really lead to much progress. No, we were just like, and when we joined, Juan, no, he, that was like the first time when most of us there, switched our whole way of how we trained and ran. No, we doing it much more strategical and complex, and sort of say complex. No, doing runs at a very slow pace, but for very long, prolonged periods of time, not trying to keep your heart rate at a low zone, and stuff that, you know, us before, the very crazy energetic guys wouldn't understand in the beginning. Like, hey, I can't run this slow, man. Why can't you know, why can't I just like go? You know, like, it's like you just listen and you know, slow down. And then, you know, and of course with that, interval trainings and strength trainings and that together, that we were with a big group of other really talented runners, that you know, everybody would help each other and push each other, and that was a clear, and let me, yeah, that was clear how led to a good progress in a very good progress in the way I ran and most of the people that I ran with. No?
Yeah, it's just like believing in your coach and trusting the process, and I think the group efforts definitely helped too, to push each other and become better as a unit. Was Boston the goal for you, or when did you start thinking about Boston? And because I know for some people who start running, it's like it becomes a dream immediately. I know for me it wasn't the case. It just kind of I was in triathlon and then I started thinking about it, and then it happened and I was like, wow, this is like the coolest thing ever, you know. when did it become something for you, or that was that the ultimate for you?
So to be honest, not really. I guess by that point in time, I had already started running I've already started trail running. And there was this sort of clash between, you know, me taking off and doing trails, and then my teammates, and there was like a couple of people in the team that did have this really, really crazy fixation with Boston, no? And it was so, this fixation of them was so big that they pretty much thought that was like a universal goal for every runner, no? So, yeah. So they would, you know, they would say like, Mao, you have to stop trail running. That's distracting you, and that's like, that's going to make you slower. You're going to get hurt, and we've got to run Boston, man. And so I guess, you know, maybe with a bit of the group peer pressure and everything, I did a good enough time, and I ran Boston, but it wasn't, again, it wasn't like something that I dreamt of. No, of course it's an amazing event, and I'm so happy that I ran it. No, but yeah, it wasn't. I mean, my mind was already somewhere else. Where for me, running, no, it's more about the exploration and more about the adventure, and not really about the very methodical and very, you know, that mindset of time and of records and of stats.
Yeah, you don't see it that way.
Yeah, I
don't. Were they right about the injuries in the trails, or can you
not really, man?
Back, well, and tell them I told you.
I mean, also knock on wood. No, I've been really, really lucky, and maybe that has to do with my complexion. No? I'm a very short guy, and like also very, I don't weight anything. Like I'm very, very, I don't weight much. So I think my complexion has helped me as of today to have, I have not really, really getting any injured from running. No. Yeah. And so, yeah.
So has the adventure side of you in the trail running, finding new routes, has that always been part of your life? Do you remember, like, has it just been a natural progression for you, or is there something specific that came to you where you prefer that over running on the roads?
Yeah, the thing is, what I definitely, I with trail running, I found it was the intersection of the things that I most liked, you know? So running is one of my biggest passions in life. And then the outdoors is one of my other biggest passions in life. Mountains, no, the natural world, and also the sense of adventure and of the sense of discovery, and that's something that I've always done in various ways. I've either from mountaineering or rock climbing or just hiking, and then when I found out that there was, you know, this trail running scene that was for me. And so, yeah, I mean, the first trail race I ever ran, I don't think I'm going to ever step a road again. This is my place.
And where you're living now, is it easier to find the trails? I know you said it's not too far from you, but, is it better trail wise than it is road wise anyways?
That's a good question. Maybe. I mean, road wise, I mean, again, this city is so damn big that if you depends on where you live, if you do road running, you probably should stick to that, the part of the city where you can do the road running. Because moving from one part of the city to the other can be really complicated, no? So in that sense, then, yeah, I think you are a bit more restricted in terms of your road running, although there's, like, really, really amazing places that you can do great road running. But in it, comparing it with the trail possibilities that maybe are not as close as, you know, from where you live, but there's more options, and there's... we're at very high altitude here, and there's a lot of volcanoes in our radius, maybe like a 2 hour, no, less, like a 1.5 hour radius from Mexico City. You can get to many, many volcanoes, and all of that is just a Disneyland for outdoors, no?
Awesome. I read that with the running and the adventures, you've done some pretty amazing expeditions or multi-day kind of races. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
Yeah, sure, man. So it was, I think, 2 New Year's Eve ago that I didn't have really much anything to do. So I had already had the idea of, there was this idea of lingering around for some time that I wanted to engage or experience a solo expedition. And so I opened up, most of my friends go to this beach in the state of Oaxaca, which is south of Mexico, to celebrate New Year's Eve, no? And I had already been there a couple of times to celebrate, and this time they were also going to go, but I gave it a twist, no. Instead of going, instead of driving there, I said, like, hey, well, I'll run there, and I will run there from Oaxaca City, and so I pretty much started to do my research, and from Oaxaca City, you have to pretty much cross this Sierra, the South Sierra of Oaxaca, to get to the Pacific Ocean, no? And so I started to do my research of where was the best way for me to cross the Sierra, I was just started digging around within the community itself, also the mountain biking people, and figuring ways. So eventually I ended up with this route that I had mapped out or planned, that it was a project that it was going to take me 4 days, because it was an approximate 140 something kilometers. And so then I pretty much packed the most, I mean, like very, 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 very lightly, and the most lightly I could. And then took a bus, got dropped in this town called Miahuatlán de Porfirio Díaz. And then as soon as I got off that small bus, I, you know, put on my best and just started running up to the mountains, to the Sierra, and pretty much, I didn't really stop and I had a really good progress. So I, instead of doing the 4 days, I ended up only doing three, which was good. that experience has been, as of now, I think one of my most fun and most experiences where I've probably learned the most about many stuff, not about life, I guess, in general, no, being completely alone and exposed and away sometimes from pretty much anything, teaches you a lot, no? And it was pretty humbling how my plan was, I mean, here in Mexico, there's this, people are usually known for being very welcoming and more, even more so in towns, no? So I was already counting on when I was going to go through the towns and when I was going to spend the nights, just going to ask around where, if someone could give me shelter. And so they did, no? First night, this lady, you know, gave me shelter in her home, very humble, very, you know, very old, you know, you could to a certain degree say like poor, but in a way that probably only someone from a city dweller would say someone's poor, but they are more rich than anyone, no? in life and so much that they will, you know, welcome me and give me food and allow me to sleep on their house, no? And then eventually I got to my destination. I got to the Pacific Ocean, I remember arriving to the beach, and my friends were all already there, like laying on the sand, you know, sunbathing. Some of them hang over, and then I just pop up and like, hey, what's up? I'm here.
And what did they say?
And like, oh, wow, man, you made it. You're alive. Actually.
Was there a level of danger? Was there a level of danger in a trip like that for 3 days? Like, what were your, some things you needed to be cautious about?
Cautious? I mean, one thing was not getting lost. Because there were some stretches that where there was really not anything at all between like really small towns. So stretches of maybe, you know, 30 kilometers that you were where you really went deep in the Sierra and there wasn't anything. So any injury, any fall, anything that you could happen to me, if it happened there, it could have been bad, no? Because getting help was out of the question. No signal, no nothing. So it was about just being really, really focused and cautious about that and aware about that you couldn't fuck up. And and then also, I mean, I also selected that route because of that, but there's usually in some places of Mexico, you know, well, there's a lot of, well, not a lot, but in some places there are presence of drug cartels and trafficking and mostly sometimes in remote, well, most of the times in the really remote places is where you find them, no? Mm-hmm. So there was this slight, you know, risk of me bumping into like a, something like that. But to be honest, you know, from my experience, even if I did bump into, because it's not my first time. I mean, I've bumped into drug cartels. I mean, if they would have seen me, you know, this bearded, crazy ass guy with like tiny shorts and a vest, they would have they would have recognized that I was there minding my own business, no?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
just a traveler, but yeah, I'm sure that can be scary at times, and present. Yeah, I only know that from not from experience, but from like movies and TV shows. So I'm happy you could confirm that. Would you say that that was maybe the greatest accomplishment that you've ever had?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like running adventures, yeah, I think that that's probably, it's been the, as of now, the most exposed, the most, the longest, more, the most complex, like adventure I have done, I guess. Yeah.
And what do you, what do you like to bring? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there's been other adventures which are like high up there, but this one specifically, because it was a solo thing, I would consider that. But yeah.
It was like a mission.
Yeah.
What did you bring for food? What do you like? What do you eat on these for trail races or trail running, or stage race type events?
I mean, I try to eat mostly real food, no? And the less processed and the less processed the better, no? I mean, for example, gels and all of that, I don't really consume, because I'm not really fond of them. I don't like, although you in Canada have this amazing one that I've tried, the maple syrup with ginger thing.
Oh, Endurance Tap?
Yeah. Man, I'm a sweet tooth.
I love that one too.
I'm a sweet tooth. And when I remember one of our trips, one guy from Canada just, you know, gave me that to try. And I said, well, this is a gel that I would have, because it's not a gel, it's maple syrup. No, it's
it's so natural.
Yeah, so natural stuff. And I mean, for that particular run, I think I packed, you know, just several, you know, Ziplocs with sort of trail mixes, no, with different powerful stuff, no, and I mean, I was also counting that I was going to go through towns where I could buy fruit and stuff, no, so because I couldn't really, I mean, the plan was to carry the least amount of stuff that I could, so
for sure.
So I did, yeah.
What's the greatest running advice you've ever received?
This is a good one. So there's this project and this adventure we once did with Aire Libre in Arizona. We went and ran along the U.S. border and then Mexico in this really crazy and isolated part of the border. I think it's the region where the most deaths happen because of immigrants just get lost or dehydrated and so, well, we connected with a native tribe that their nation originally expands from Arizona all the way to Mexico to the Sonora Desert, no? And we went and ran with them along the border and, you know, documented this story. We were there trying to communicate and talk about this story of how, well, we are all one race and we're all the same, and it was a message of unity and it was like a very, very, you know, this very special place to do it because of the whole situation of them being originally Tohono native people, but at the same time their country was divided before these other countries existed, and some of them were on one side, some on the other, and so we did that, and then during that adventure, we, in one event, there was this Hopi tribe member, which they're a bit more to the north of Arizona. And the Hopis, I think among the native tribes in the area, they're the most famous because of running. Huh? They are the most, the best runners. And we were talking, and he was this elderly guy, and he was talking about this ceremony that they have, which is called the snake ceremony, where they pretty much, you know, start running early in the morning, and someone like a front runner will have this sort of tag and they have to run as fast as they can, and then like a bunch of other runners have to follow and try to catch him and rip the tag. And whoever rips the tag, now they have to chase him. And that goes on until there's one man standing, no? And that can go on for days of running and running and running and running. And then when he was describing me all of this, I was very naively like asking, like, hey, so what's like, what's the distance that you run? No, how fast and how much do you run? And then he just started laughing, you know, this deep voice, like, ha ha ha, man, time and distance, that's something only white people measure. Yeah. And man, this is coming from precisely as I said, no, I'm someone that runs not because of how fast and how, you know, and the stats and that, because running for me is a spiritual vehicle. It's a way to live the best way I can it's hard to, I mean, I still live in a big city. I'm surrounded by the running world, which mostly revolves around that. Sometimes you forget. This piece of wisdom was like, man, hats off. Like, that's it.
Yeah. It really grounds you, I guess. And yeah, there's more. I was talking about this with my friend this morning, how like this pandemic and everything going on, it's really taught us to just enjoy running. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing coming. There's no races, maybe until next year. But it doesn't really matter. We're not struggling. We're running for our fitness right now. We're running for our health. We're running because we can. We're just enjoying that process and that journey. And that's really what it's all about, in my opinion. But it kind of goes along the same lines. But I like that you started telling me about a story that you had in one of your adventures. And so clearly you're not one to shy away from adventure. You love to run. How did Aire Libre come about?
Out of an adventure.
Maybe that was a dumb question. I'm sorry.
No, but so one of my partners, Manuel Morato, was, he's originally from the Sonora Desert, no, up in the border with Arizona. And there was this Christmas where he told me he wanted to run an ultra distance. He up in his native town, and so he pitched me the idea, and I said, yeah, I don't really have anything to do. I'll join. Well, now it seems that when I don't have anything to do, I sign up on crazy missions. So he proposed the idea, and originally he wanted to run from the capital called Hermosillo there and to the beach, but then that was going to be all road running. And when I joined the plan, I said, like, hey man, let's think of this through, no? Let's do something more interesting. And so this state runs along the Sea of Cortez in just like in Baja California, south and north. And the Sea of Cortez is right there. You know, the Sea of Cortez is known because it's called the aquarium of the world. It's one of the most richest parts of the ocean in terms of like life. And so we ended up mapping out this route that ran from this tiny ass town called El Desemboque all the way to the point where he wanted to reach in Bahía de Quino. And I mean, from the map, this looked just so epic. No, it was going to go all along the ocean, the Sea of Cortez. To our right side, we were going to have the biggest island in all of Mexico as a site. And this is, all of this land is part of a reservation that belongs to another native tribe called the Seri people. And fortunately, Manuel's mother has a really good relation with that tribe. She has always helped them and been in contact with them, and so through her is how we were able to, because this has made this adventure defined what Aire Libre is now. No, like looking back, you can't run. You just can't go and run in the middle of nowhere without asking permission to the one who, or the tribe, or the whoever owns or lives in that place. I mean, if you do it, you can get into trouble, and it makes completely sense. If you go into someone's home, you have to knock the door and ask if you can come. So we did that, and through Manuel's mother, Manuel met with the elderly council of the Seti people, and he pitched them our idea that was basically, hey, so we want to run 90 kilometers across your land and just reach to this other place. I mean, at that point, when he was going to do it, we were like, we felt how ridiculous our proposition was. But then this is where it turns around. Then Manuel pitches them the idea, and then now the council comes and talks and answers like, man, please, you have to do this. We welcome you, and we thank you, because this is what you're going to do. We see it as a sacrifice that is going to bring us good to our land and to our people. And that was one of the first teachings of how, running was regarded and is regarded since the beginnings of all of these cultures, before running was a running industry, and running was and is this. And so it was incredible to have that invitation. And there was only one condition, which was this part of the world of Mexico also is quite remote, quite remote. Even more remote than probably than where I ran in that adventure that I told. And as I said, this borders Arizona, and it's in the middle of nowhere. So this is hands down one of the main roads and tracks for drug smuggling to the US. Mm-hmm. So they said, yeah, well, there's one condition. We're going to assign you two of our tribes people, and they're going to be with machine guns, and they'll be protecting you along the road. And we're like, whoa, okay. This is kind of this is escalated a bit quickly. And at that point, I had already also invited a couple of friends from New York to come and run, because I knew that they were going to be in the city. I knew that they were up to such plans, and I pitched the idea, and they ended up coming, and they were also, they're as crazy as us. So when they even heard about some tribes members with AK-47 running with us or scolding us, they were like, okay, that makes it even more, attractive. We did it. We ran it. This guys actually didn't even show up, the guys with the machine gun, so we didn't wait for them. We executed the adventure, and we ran those 90K in one day, and documented the whole adventure. Our third partner, Daniel Almazan, we is my best friend and a documentary photographer. I invited him to come and cover this whole thing. So we came out with this amazing, amazing story and this amazing visuals and photography that we definitely had to put out in the world. And that's how Aire Libre started, out of that adventure and out of us learning all of those things and trying and wanting to inspire people to be more active and in contact with nature, because for us, those are key elements for someone's happiness. Even more so for people that are city dwellers like us, that are completely disconnected from from all of this, no? And that's how it started. And you know, it got a really good reception, no, in terms of it got published and in some media, and it was like we got great feedback. And of course, after, you know, just after arriving from that adventure, we were already thinking of the next. And we didn't really stop. All of this content and adventures led eventually to people writing to us and asking us how they could join the stuff we were doing. And that eventually then translated into us doing experiences, no? The stuff we were doing, trying to, you know, maybe doing them not that complicated and complex and exposed, but all of these elements that we were exploring of ancient knowledge, of using running more as a vehicle to explore, to connect with nature, with yourself, with the people that you do it. And all of these we embedded in the experiences, and we haven't stopped now, to the point where, I mean, we're native from Mexico and we began doing them here, but I mean, we're curious, energetic. And so then at some point our country looked small and there were many other parts to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Were you doing
something else for work at the time when you took on this adventure? And
yeah,
what was that transition like for you?
Yeah, so I mean, my background is in marketing, digital marketing, and then in growth hacking, and you know, helping software startups to grow and stuff. So at that point in time, I mean, when Aire Libre was born, I was doing growth hacking at real estate marketplace. And then after that, I actually then switched to another startup, like a visual health startup. And at that point is where the experiences started. My bosses and my partners became my clients at this other, you know, hobby sort of sidekick that I had. But then that one day we became aware that there was a chance for us to take it to another level. And you know, we had to take that decision of, well, let's adventure it and then let's see where it goes. I started working fully for it. And then my partner Daniel right after joined me, and I mean we're a small team now. I mean we're six people, and we're doing all of this.
Looking back, did you ever expect that to be your future? Like, are you surprised it happened? Or
not at all, man. I mean, and that's what I always tell, and I mean. I would also give this as an advice, no? It's hard to, I would have never expected for this to happen. This was where we're at is the consequence of a very organic pursuit of our curiosity and of our, and again, as cheesy as this might sound, of our passion, no? So every little step we took opened other possibilities, other branches, you know, and that they were all aligned with all of this core concept and what we liked, and that eventually led to this. But it was never really, I mean, we had no idea when we started that we were going to be, you know, plus some years in making our living out of this, and so, you know, it's hard to. Yeah, I mean, in general, no, it's I mean, of course, I'm up, and definitely it's good to plan and see and try to see the future and have a certain goal. But I guess this is the same, and I guess this relates with my running approach as well. No, the having a fixation on a future, on a very clear defined metric or goal, it can sometimes, deviate you from the real. So I always say the only people that are really constructing their future are the ones that are living in the present.
Mm.
The ones who are just hooked on their future because they want to get somewhere, usually they don't end up neither there nor anywhere. They just some lost.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point for sure. It's like living in the moment is like, it's something a lot of people have a hard time with, but if you can do it, then it's going to take you further ahead. Do you practice any, I want to ask you more about Aire Libre, obviously, but do you practice any kind of mindfulness or meditation or anything like that?
Yeah. I meditate. I mean, it variates. No, I'm not that rigorous, but I usually I do, and I've meditated for some 3 years now, more or less. But then again, also my running, I also see it as a meditation practice, no? And especially when I run in nature, it's a moving meditation practice for me.
So where did you come up with the name Aire Libre? Like who came up with that? Who's going to take credit?
If I'm not mistaken, well, earlier I said that my memory was my biggest enemy, but somehow I kind of remember that I came up with the name. But I mean, it was a very simple thing. I mean, what I do remember is that we didn't really have this crazy long weekend debate over what to name ourselves, but it came out very quickly. And Aire Libre is pretty much a way of trying to say outdoors, in Spanish, no? Aire meaning air, no? And libre, free, no? Like free air, and which embodied the spirit, a lot of the spirit of what we do. And it sounded well. And so, I mean, I remember we didn't really have to, discuss much. It was just, said, and okay, I think that works. And the same goes for the logo, man. That's really crazy. Like, we had our friend design the logo, and she came back and so, okay, this is my first draft of like where I want to go. It's like, well, you don't just stop. Don't go anywhere. That's it. So, yeah, I think it was probably the easiest creative brainstorming exercises that I've been in were those.
Yeah, and I saw it's really like the marketing and stuff behind everything you guys are doing is pretty on point. I did check out your website and stuff and watched some of the videos up there, and there's all kinds of like nice photos and stuff like that too. I can see through the photos that there's like quite a diverse group of people too that attend these adventures. Why do you think that is, and what type of runners are you attracting?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good question, because again, I was thinking that bringing this idea back that we don't pursue running as as with how fast and how long, or we're more of a hippie tribe of just moving with our feet. And we invite pretty much anyone that can move and can walk to join our experiences, no? And we've done a good work in communicating that. So pretty much, and it's really good because we have designed the experiences to allow it, no? To allow for in the same experiences to have someone that maybe has never ran more than 5Ks in their life, and have someone that's like maybe a 3-time Boston runner, have them in the same group and enjoy the same experience as much without being there any, barrier or stress of I'm too slow or I'm too fast. And that's, I mean, the way we approach it is because we do a work in both in the mindset that we tell people to be in when we're out there. So we're very community based, and we call our community La Familia, no? So like the family. So when we're out there we're usually small groups of 15, maximum 20 people. And the fast runners are pretty much like the ones that we tell that they're like the protectors of the group. So they'll have to be helping out marking the trails, and we stop and we wait for people, and but everyone is already has been sold on this mindset, and that's the thing that most helps for so that we can have anyone, no? And then of course in the technical way is we have a guide that will be able to run as fast as the fastest runner, and then we'll have a guide that will walk or crawl with the last person, and so that has that's the most beautiful thing. When we have in terms of ages, in terms of countries, everything, it's very diverse. Now we have had people, you know, in their 60s, and that in the same group, someone with in their early 20s, interestingly, also most of the assistants, like 70% of the people that join us, are women and are solo women travelers, no? Which is something that happened also organically, no? We didn't really never plan for to cater, you know, to that, you know, niche or whatever, but it somehow happened, no? Mm.
That's awesome. What do you think the runners are more attracted to, like the adventure side, that maybe that it's a bit dangerous at times? I mean, maybe they're not all as dangerous as maybe the first one you guys did, but or are they more attracted to like the spiritual journey that is the running?
Mm. Yeah, I think it's, most people are attracted to the philosophy and the values that we, you know, that we've embedded in the project. So it's part of a big part is this way of seeing running more as a spiritual practice and as a, and that, and also the cultural part, no? I mean, we travel and we go to amazing places and where there's rich cultures. And so all of the cultural part is also like a big element, no? And the culture we embedded in everything, no? From food to art, no? To ceremonies, to so. Mm. Yeah, it's, and I think those are two elements that are the biggest reasons why people are, you know, hear of our project and then are attracted, no?
Yeah. I can see like how it like really brings people together and unites people.
Oh man, you wouldn't if I may, let me give you a story to validate that. Please. Idea. But it's crazy how fast people unite in these experiences, and there's an experience we do in the Sierra Tarahumara. This is also in Mexico and northwest of Mexico. This is the lands of the Tarahumara or Rarámuri runners, no? The legendary runners. You know, if you have read Born to Run, these are the guys, no? The ultra marathon legends. And so we do an experience there, and there was, I think it was the second night. And there was this driver who, well, we usually, you know, rent like a bus or something, and the driver came up to me one night, second night, when this was like a 20, yeah, like a big group, like 20 people, and he tells me, "Mau, please, maybe you can give me the answer." And he tells me like, "So how is it that you all know each other?" And I was like, "Well, or for how long, you know, man, we've known each other, you know, just when you picked us up at the airport and we met you, we've known each other since then." And he couldn't believe the intimacy and the like deep relations and the trust that had been built in only those 2 days among the group. And he was like, "Man, that's impossible." Like, and I mean, and you could see like he was a tourist. I mean, he usually works in tourism and he hosts like regular tourism groups because I never in my history of driving, you know, tourists around, I've never seen people like connected in this way, you know? And that's again why we named the community La Familia, no? Because that happens over and over, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. Would you say that's your favorite part of throwing these experiences?
Oh yeah, that and that there are transformational experiences. I mean, in the sense that many people that come and experience end up to some degree changed or with a new perspective on their lives. And in some cases, we have had beautiful you know, examples of people that have been really open and told us like how, you know, they had been maybe, you know, depressed for 3 years of their life, like clinically depressed, and that their last 5 days in this trip had taught them and showed them what happiness was again, no? And such experiences and transformational experiences happen over and over, and when we hear that, that's the most rewarding and the thing that makes me the happiest, no? When we can do that. And so, yeah, that's it.
What, how has it transformed your life? What impact has maybe these events had on you, and more specifically running?
Well, I guess in the running, it has just made me more, it has reinforced my adventure and exploration running approach, you know, because now, I mean, I have to do it because it's my job. No, like I have to, you know, go and explore and go and, you know, run routes to see if they're available and good enough for a trip that we're designing. So it has, and that's, I mean, I guess that's where, you know, you could say I'm living the dream, no? That I'm, you know, that's my job, and now it has just reinforced this adventurous approach to running, and I guess it just in general, in ways that it has changed me as well. Probably it has taught me that if again, no, I don't want to, but I guess I have to sound cheesy, but if you do follow your heart passion and you have that drive, eventually, and nothing happens fast, no? But if you invest the time and then your energy and you take the steps, you can do pretty much anything you want, man. It's just a matter of not giving a rat's ass about social expectations, and being determined.
Yeah, it's it brings you so much, and I'm happy that you found it, and now you're able to like do it all the time and do it for work. I think that's the dream. Are there any like personal goals that you're still after, or are you fully committed to Aire Libre and what you guys are doing with that?
No, I do. I mean, there's definitely a lot of other like projects, solo projects and stuff that as a runner I would love to do. Not like, you know, we're, you know, inspired by, you know, have you ever heard of Ricky Gates? He did this project where he ran across the U.S. and documented the whole this whole story, and it was his approach to it was like in a more of a, you know, sociological approach of understanding his country, and epic and bigger adventures as that are definitely on my mind. And I mean, we've talked about, you know, partners of someday maybe running, you know, Mexico from one point to the other. And yeah, I mean, there's there are many ideas, and as long as I have the legs and the energy and I'll be doing some. I'll be executing.
Is there anybody that you look up to in the ultra world, or any athletes that you follow that have inspired or motivated you?
Yeah, there's a bunch of people that inspire me. I mean, one is that I've just talked about, no, Ricky Gates. We actually have had the fortune of working with him. We co-host experiences with him. But his approach and to running and his all the projects that he does are definitely an inspiration of mine. No, and I'm a big fan of Tommy Reeves as well, and more in his case of like how of a good hardcore runner he is, and all of his crew, and all the Coconino Cowboys, and all of that gang are. It's a group that I respect and I admire because of how well and disciplined and crazy runner they are. Yeah,
it's fun to follow those guys. And we had Tommy on the podcast. I mentioned to you, we just spoke to his brother. So that one will be out. Yeah. It's fun to talk to different runners and connect, and I find that there's like, it's a smaller world than we think. And I feel like all the guests are kind of, they're all connected in some way or another. They might not know it, but in my conversations and stuff like that, maybe they name drop, and then all of a sudden I'm trying to get that person on the podcast. You also have a podcast too called Beyond Running. Can you tell us about that and kind of what that's about and just share a bit about your podcast experience.
Of course, yeah. Well, yeah. As you said, the name is called Beyond Running, and the intention of the podcast was, you know, it's just to have another outlet for us to explore all of these things that I've been talking about. Where what's there around the running world that it's not only the running, no? So. Everything that is happening in culturally, as I said, spiritually, scientifically, in arts, and running, again, used as a vehicle. What's all the things that happen around where running is the glue? That's like sort of the concept of the podcast. So we usually, look for people that are doing like really interesting stuff. Through running, most recently we're a lot of exploring a lot of how you can use running as activism, to push messages, to push stories, and it's something that we've always done, since our beginnings. I don't personally host it. We've switched from hosts. But we now have the fortune to work with Fernando, who's our amazing host, and he leads really engaging conversations. We have I think it's 11 episodes now. And nice. I invite you to check it out. It's a lot of fun. I mean, podcasting is just this amazing format to put out stories and value out,
Inspire. Yeah, for sure. I love it because it's the long form content. You get to have these conversations, and like so many times, like you think you know in your research a lot about somebody, but then there's always a few things that stand out or that you've never heard before. So that's always a very interesting thing about having these conversations and stuff like that. So no, it's a lot of fun for sure. How are some ways that you are spreading the message and getting those messages out? Because you mentioned podcast is a good way to do it, and I definitely agree, and I'm trying to have more conversations about it in each episode. So I know like we're trying to like talk about these things because they're important, and we're trying to learn the best that we can. So
Yeah, I feel
are you guys doing like similar stuff, and and what are some ways that you're getting those messages across?
Yeah, so we had, I mean, it's up in our website, and we had like 3 weeks ago this conversation, which was tied around the launch of a short film we did, you know, that story that I talked about in the border, in the U.S.-Mexican border. Mm-hmm. So we published a second short film around that. And then we had this really, really good conversation with two really special guests. One, Jordan Marijas, who is part of the Lululemon Global Ambassador. And she's an activist, longtime activist, and represent many causes, mostly for Native American rights and women. And then we had Anthony Francisco from the Tohono tribe, who has been our host every time we go to Arizona, and who has also uses running as a way to also activate his community and include. His aim is mostly to try to keep youth away from trouble and through running, you know. And so we hosted this really rich conversation where we talked about how you can use running as activism, you know, and in the case of Anthony, you know, to work with the youth, and in case with Mary Jordan, with all of this Native American rights. And it's up recorded, you know, and it's up in our content hub. Mm-hmm. And I invite you to check it out. But that's that. You know? And we're doubling down definitely do believe that we can running use it as a tool to change. No, I mean, everything we have done revolves around that. And so there's stories and short films that we're, you know, working on. And that we want to, you know, produce and that are aligned with opening up more of these conversations and just our biggest aim is just to try to tell and show that there's another story that we can tell ourselves, and there's another story of how we can live in all aspects, no, in the ways how we, you know, interact with all of our other fellow human beings, in the way that we can relate to, as I said, not to nature, as the way that you can relate to yourself. There's other stories, and those are the stories that we pursue, and through experiences, through content, and through pretty much anything, we're doing our fight, no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I think it's awesome. It's all positive stuff, and yeah, it's important to hear those stories too, and I find them super interesting, and like just you talking about like this tribe and that tribe, and I know they exist, but I haven't been exposed to them. But I think that's really cool that some of these adventures do lead you into these places, and it allows you to have these conversations and see how other people live and see their culture. And I think it's fantastic. So where have these adventures taken you in the world? I know you mentioned a few places, but where has it taken you, and where are you excited to go next?
So, yeah, well, in Mexico, in a lot of like north, south, center of all of Mexico. And then it has taken us to Bolivia in South America. We have run a couple of experiences in Bolivia, which is one of my favorite places in the world. So raw country where it's, you can feel that things are real there. Mm-hmm. Peru, to the Patagonia in Chile, in the north Patagonia in Chile. We are actually hosting our last retreat of the year there in December. And then, well, we've been up in, as I said, in Arizona, in California, and we've done, we're going to, well, this year, before, you know, this, before the world stopped, we were, mm-hmm, going to do an experience in Israel in March. It was going to happen. We had designed and worked on this amazing experience that was going to go through from the Negev Desert in the south, and it was this sort of pilgrimage all the way to Jerusalem. And we had to, that was the first experience of this year that we had to just call off and basically postpone. No? But I mean, the work is done and we're going to go eventually there. I mean, we just have to plug and play now. No? And then for next year, we're planning on doing, we're working on, I mean, and this is probably some sort of exclusive because we haven't told anyone, but we're planning on and we're designing a pretty epic experience in Scotland and the Highlands.
Oh, nice.
And then, well, I mean, to be honest, as long as we have, as I said, are 2 feet everywhere. Now there's any exotic places like Mongolia is right there up on our radar. Now we're working in plans of going to Colombia and plans of Japan, plans of, you know, it's a big playground, and we'll go and hopefully share it with many people.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. I also saw one up here in Newfoundland. So,
yeah, exactly. we have that we had to postpone that as well. That was going to happen this year in August, and postponed it, and we're going to be doing it in May of next year, Newfoundland.
Nice. Yeah. And how many? Runners do you host per, I don't know if you call them retreats, I guess?
Yeah. So we try to keep them small. So I said we usually have groups from 10 tops 20 people. No? And I mean, this is one of the ingredients that we have to, you know, always have so that this magical intimacy and transformation happens. No? Bigger than that, we can dilute. The thing starts to dilute, no? So,
Yeah,
it's in that range.
Nice. What do you do when you're not running, Maurizio? You have any other passions?
Yeah. So, well, I'm a big reader as well. So I try to read a lot, and I like art and creative and overall creativity. So I'm a big, if I go to every exhibition that I can find. And I mean, luckily Mexico is the city with the biggest amount of museums in the world. So there's always plenty of, exhibits to go check out. I like, hiking. I like to, I have two dogs and I live with my girlfriend, so we like to travel and hike together, eat. I'm also like a big foodie, so, trying out restaurants and stuff. Sort of like a bon vivant.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. That's great. What's your favorite kind of food?
Oof, that's a tough one, man. But I mean, the food. I guess I do have to, not because I'm Mexican, but Mexican food is amazing, man. I mean, it's so diverse, and I think probably Mexican food and food from like the state of Oaxaca, moles, and all of that is, I guess, hands down my favorite.
I don't know if this is a coincidence, but I'm having Mexican tonight, so it's it's one of my favorites too. Probably not as good as what you're used to, but I try my best. Knowing what you know now, what would you tell a 20-year-old version of yourself?
That's a good one. I guess to try to not take life as seriously, to to see that, you know, this is it, and you have to enjoy it and not think we're not here to achieve things. We're here to live, no? And I think, well, at least myself, no? And I think I can see it a lot of younger people, no? You are maybe crazy ambitious when you're young, and you think you know, going to become CEO of this and that. And then, you know, all of this trying to achieve eventually either ends up in building a lot of, you know, stress and disappointment and depression eventually, so it's take it easier. No, I would have told myself, no, take it easier and relax. No. And as I said before, no, try to focus on what's now right here and have the trust that by doing that, you will curiously and fun enough get to where you're, you know, where you want to go.
Have you seen it like that a lot of times with running? Like, it seems like you've always just enjoyed it. Like, is that fair to say that you just like enjoy the process and the, or has there ever been a time where you didn't enjoy it as much as you do now?
No, I think I've always enjoyed it. And one of my biggest learnings there in my solo adventure was that, no, if I was trying to think of like, when am I going to get to the beach, no, or how many kilometers do I have left for the day? If I put my mind on that, then I immediately it would have turned itself into some sort of frustration, and then that frustration into not enjoying what I was doing. No, so my one of my biggest learnings there is like, I mean, as long as you're moving, as long as you're, you know, it doesn't really matter how fast or how slow, but as long as you're moving towards that north, you're gonna get there. Have that trust and then enjoy it. No? And if you allow yourself to trust in that, you know, in that process, then nothing can take the fun out of it. No?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like working that mental game. It sounds like that's how you get out of like some negative self-talk, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, exactly. It's like, you know, when am I going to get there? You'll get there. It doesn't really help to, you know, to put your mind on that thought. You know, you just, you know, push it out and just move. You're moving. You're going to get.
Yeah, so, any other mantras that you have for running or to get yourself out of a negative space?
I personally have this approach of running as there's two things I usually say, you know, or think. One is that when I'm running out in the trails or in mountains, I don't say that I'm running, but I'm more like dancing with the earth. And so that's a thought and a concept that I always like, because it helps me. Yeah, it helps me. It reminds me of how you can move smoothly with it, no? Of how you can, you know, connect in a way that your rhythm, you know, kind of plays with the environment. And related, the other thing is that, you know, I like to play, and usually when I'm out with friends or with groups and stuff, I always try to, you know, let people know, like, you know, come bring out your inner child back, and let's pretend, you know, we're this couple of you know, cowboys, or this gang out here in the woods, and we're going to have fun without any, you know, constraints. You know, your dad and your mother is not around not to tell you not to put mud on your face and run. So to approach it as a way of playing, no, and connecting to your inner child, and shouting, no, and you know, I like to shout and make noises, like wild noises, when I start running in trails, like, and because that puts me in that mindset of you know, I'm toying around here, no, and because that's how I believe that, I mean, that's how I do it, and that's how I like it. That's how what I like to show.
Yeah, it's more playful, it's more fun, it's loose, it's all those things. I love what you said about dancing with the earth. It's, I think a lot of times we can feel like our feet are pounding the pavement or the trail, or but dancing sounds very light on your feet and springy. Yeah, and I don't know, that's what I thought of. So it might help me in the trails, because I tend to be a bit clumsy where I'm knocking my feet on rocks and stuff. So maybe that frame of mind will help me get through.
Let me know.
yeah for sure I will. What does running mean to you?
So I mean, I guess a big answer to this is, it's running for me is like one of the most essential things of life. No, running for me to a certain extent is life. No, and it's a way of connecting to everything. It's a way of connecting to Earth. It's a way to connect with you. It's a way to connect with the plants and with the animals and with the people that you're doing it. I think there aren't many other activities that have this powerfulness that running can be. And it makes sense. No, running is, it's the most primitive sport. No, running is how we became. And so that's what it is. Yeah, that's what it is to me.
Awesome. Maurizio, where can people find out everything that you do and more about Aire Libre and the adventures that you put on?
So pretty much in all of our social media, you can find us with airelibre.run. That's in Instagram and Facebook. We're a bit more Instagram-centric guys, so there. And our website, www.airelibre.run, and there you can find out about all of the experiences that we have upcoming, our content hub, where you can find everything from all of the short films that we've been putting out along the years, our live conversations, the podcast, you can find it all there, no? And reach out, no? Reach out. We're always happy to connect. We're a project that believes collaboration is essential, no? So, you know, pretty much if you have an idea and you pitch it, you know, and it's aligned, we pretty much, you know, are down to making stuff happen, no? So.
Yeah, right before we got on, I saw you guys have your own Cieli hats too, so that's pretty.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a hat brand that connects the world, so it's pretty exactly. It's pretty great.
We're publishing a documentary tomorrow, I think. It's a documentary that precisely captures one of our experiences, the one that takes place in Oaxaca during Day of the Death. So it's a long, sort of a 40-minute documentary, and we're publishing that this week. So you'll be able to see that, and if you want to, you know, see it with your own eyes, there's that.
That's awesome. I'll definitely check it out. And I can't wait to see what else you guys come out with. Maurizio, any final thoughts before we close it up here?
I mean, first of all, thank you. I really, really have enjoyed this conversation, and thanks for creating the space and having me and our project as a part of it. And my last is, I mean, I guess I invite you to try to embed a bit of this mindset where you know, sort of preaching around running, know that, you know, you can use it as a deeper vehicle, and now it's needed. No, now more than ever, we need to connect, and running approach in this way, as I said, no, it's the most powerful tool there is to connect and see that there's other stories and there's other ways of relating and leading your life. So that's how I think I'm going to wrap it up.
Nice. Thank you so much. I appreciate your words, and yeah, you've given me a lot to think about and insight. And I definitely am curious about what adventures you have coming up next, and something I definitely would love to take a part in down the road at some point.
Please, man.
Once this all kind of gets back to normal.
We'll do.
Thanks so much for coming on, Maurizio. I really appreciate your time and again, and your words. So yeah, I really value this conversation, and we'll talk again soon.
Awesome, man. Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by the WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. But seeing as we can't do that in person right now, let's try our best to stay connected through social media. How can you do that? Every Monday, we'll connect through a virtual run. You can go out there at any time of the day and run any distance you choose. When you get home, share your run with us on Instagram by tagging at WRGRuns. And we'll post it in our stories for everyone to see. It's a tough time for everyone, so hopefully this helps us stay motivated to get out there and keep moving. If you want to learn more, visit our website, imarunner.ca, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Hope to see you all soon. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.